So Nia, the Makba as it happens.
"1,395 Days Without Red" is a cinematic project by Sheila Kamrich and Anne Risala in collaboration with Ari Benjamin Myers. Conceived, developed and filmed collaboratively, it led to the production of two separate films, which were presented together for the first time at Makba. The two films take viewers on a journey into the past from the perspective of the present, through the artist's daily roots in today's Sarajevo, which recreate what was once known as Sniper Alley. In his films, photographs and installations, Anne Risala has developed a body of work in which the notions of space, time and sound become interlinked key elements, approximating fragments of a more complex reality. Through a seemingly simple story, he places the viewer in a complex scenario from a social, political and historical point of view. In many of his works, sound is an essential structural element that requires a huge conceptual leap. He does not make soundtracks for his films. He makes soundtrack films that are increasingly musical, less narrative, and extremely abstract. The concept of space is therefore extremely important in Salah's work, not only the abstract space referred to in his films, but also the exhibition space. Sania talks to Anne Risala about his work, the use of absence, and the relationship between ruptures and the continuum of history. The importance of sound.
Since the very beginning, sound has been very important in my work, even when it's absent. Like it started with the very first film, Intervista. And then in the last 7 years, the musical sound has become very important. I call it musical sound and not music, because very often the way how I film and the way what interests me is not only film music in the making as part of the activity and the action what's happening in the film, but also that I'm interested to film music the moment it's about to become music, the moment it becomes music. Like in the case of Long Sorrow, which is a film with a saxophone player improvising live while he's being suspended in mid-air in a very high building in Berlin. It's not the saxophone that I have been filming, but it's the mouth and the air coming, bursting out of his lungs. So it's the moment when breath becomes music instead of the moment when music becomes public. Another example is a film called Answer Me, where a couple are splitting, and as the woman is trying to spell the last word of this separation, the man is playing the drums, in a way silencing her or not wanting to hear, and she is sitting opposite to him and next to a drum which is not being used. But because of all this happening in a dome built by Buckminster Fuller with a heightened quality of echo and potential of sound circulating and echoing itself, just the playing of the drum by the man makes the other drum play on its own with a little delay. So the connection between music as it happens and architecture is very important in the way how I think and I work. In the case of Answer Me, the beat of the drum that's being played, which was composed for this film by the drummer who is at the same time one of the two characters in the film, was composed keeping in mind the frequency response of the space, the frequency to which the dome responded better. To me, this is very, that does interest me, the way how the music is made, but also how sound bounces in the space and how sound and architecture cross each other. And by the way they cross each other, they create a resonance which goes beyond mere reverberation. It's capable of creating the beginning of a meaning, a perception of meaning.
Okay, now with everyone.
Using absence.
I think sometimes the absence helps an element leave the banality of the everyday life and be present by being absent and articulate itself. So sometimes things become clearer and more articulated when they are absent, in response to what is given, in response to an image, in response to a location. In the case of Intervista, I did not take away the sound. I happened to find a film where my mother, very young member of the communist youth, giving interview to the state TV and following a congress of the communist youth where at the very end Enver Hoxha, the dictator or the leader as he was called at the time, comes and greets her at the end of this congress. But there is no sound in it, so I wanted to find out what she said at the time, but there was no enigma, like everything was very clear what one could say and could not say at the time. So I wanted to find the words, not as much as to find out what she said, but more as a key that would give me the possibility to measure the difference between then and now. And because the sound was lost, the only way to find out the words was to reconstitute them by reading her lips. So the absence of the sound was like a gift in a way, because I would never have done this film if there would have been sound right away, because there was nothing for me to find out. Like I said, it was a very clear, there was no surprise, there was no secret about the past in that sense. But it was the fact that the sound was missing, it made it possible to start this process. And one other happy, lucky finding in the course of this process is that after I found the words and I subtitled the interview that I found and I showed it to my mother, she could not believe. To make it crystal clear, it's not that she did not believe in what she said. Like I said, the content of what could be said at that time, that was it. But the surprise of my mother was the fact that it did not sound articulated. And this is because the syntax of the language changed from then until now. Like it broke at some point in the beginning of the transition, and over time one realizes that the way how it was spoken, it was different. It was very stiffened. It had to serve a regime and it broke down. And one can realize it looking back years and years later. So it made me aware of this very important element, which is syntax, which most of the time we don't think of because it's like a transparent thing. It's like glass. You have to blow warm breath on it to realize that it's there. And syntax becomes visible only in moments of rupture. So there it became visible, because the moment that language endured a shock, in the moment that there was a rupture in the continuity of the regime, there is a moment of transition, the moment of democracy, and language had to restart its functioning. This was like the beginning, the genesis of my interest in sound, or in the absence of sound, and also my lack of trust in language, in verbal language.
Telling a story through its points of rupture.
I grew up in moments when were ruptures. But at the same time, since the moment when I moved outside Albania, I moved into a space which was more continuous, in a part of the world which did not go through the same sudden ruptures in society, ruptures in the politics, ruptures in the system of value, ruptures in the individual lives, and how these big changes reflected and impacted everybody's life. So in a way, is rupture and continuity versus together compared to, in correspondence with continuity, that does interest me. So in a way, I was able to get interest in the idea of a rupture only once I stepped into the continuity of another society, like since the moment I moved to Paris and I was studying there, because it's only when you step into somebody's continuity that you understand and start to articulate better your own ruptures, and vice versa. And this not only in terms only of the political or values, or but also in terms of temperature, for example. This project that I did 2 years ago, which is called Why the Lion Roars, which is a composition of, like, I picked up 60 feature films of different genres, different productions, black and white, colored, comedy, drama, from Turkey, from Thailand, Hollywood, old, contemporary, more recent, big budget, mainstream, like rare films. And each of them, I choose them because each of them makes me feel a certain precise degree of temperature, Celsius. So each of them represents 1 degree of Celsius. And this program, which is at the end, is like being in a cinema. There is a projector projecting a film. But what makes it different is that this projector is connected to a thermometer just outside the place where the installation is. And the thermometer measures the weather outside, and when there is a change in temperature of 1 degree, the projector continues, starts projecting the film, the new film, which represents the new degree. So in a way, speaking of rupture and continuity, there is a rupture of narratives because it interrupts one film to follow with another one, but there is yet a feeling of progress, of continuity, which is the continuity of temperature. So by rupturing the narratives of each film, that's how it manages to stay in a level of continuity. This is also very much reflected in the 1395 Days Without Red, because sometimes the crossings, which during the siege were like dead ends, that's where one's life could end due to the snipers and to the awaiting danger. And sometimes when she's not able to move further, she moves further with the symphony in her head. So where she meets a moment of being stopped, she advances on another level. Sometimes where she cannot advance neither in the space, neither in the music, then is the orchestra, the Sarajevo Orchestra, that helps her to move further by taking and by repeating the part that she has in her head until it becomes clear to her. But at the same time, what becomes clear is not only the music, but also its effect becomes clear that that's the moment to cross the road. So it's a continuous dialogue and negotiation between progressing on one level while being stopped and stuck in the other level. But what is important is that at the end, it's a continuous progress.
How one film became two.
In the very beginning, what became a project was meant to be one single film, and it was later down the line of the production that we came with the result of the two films. Chronologically, Art Angel invited me to do a project with them. It was a sort of carte blanche in the sense that it could have become anything from a live performance to a film to a piece of architecture. At the time, as I took some time to reflect on this one day, discussing with Sheila, we started talking about the impact of architecture of Sarajevo, how it impacted the life of the besieged citizens during that period of 1395 days. And that was the starting point. From this point on, we discussed about whether it would have been possible to excerpt the feeling of the siege through a face which would be crossing the city. So the very first idea was the idea of a face, like a close-up of a face which goes through the city. And although conceptually interesting, soon thereafter we realized that it was not sufficient. We were doing lots of research, seeing archives, filmed archives, written things about the siege, and that's how we came across this footage of the Sarajevo Philharmonic Orchestra rehearsing in the building of the TV, where we see them in the film, and that was during the course of the siege their rehearsal space, because the theater of the city was shelled and burned down in the very early stage of the siege. Later on, the moment that this close-up of a face became a musician on the way to the rehearsal, that's where the moment we realized that the music would become a very important part. So both Sheila and me, we discussed about the fact that it would be very important to have an advice from a musician. So I proposed that I speak to Ari Benjamin Myers to join us, to collaborate with us. To Ari, I believe that was also a very interesting invitation because it's very out of the common. The work with him during the project was very important because it was not like making music for the soundtrack of the film, but it was writing the words for a silent film. Because there is a dialogue in the film between Maribel, the main character, played by Maribel Verdú, and the orchestra in her head, but as well as the orchestra in the city, which is her destination in the film. And there is this dialogue, it's not a verbal, based on verbal language, but it's a dialogue of notes and music between her part and, say, the bassoon responding to her or the flute responding to her. So one of the proposals that Ari came with was Pathétique, and that became our choice, the first movement of Pathétique.
One more time.
We also prepared a storyboard, which helped us consolidate our common points of view, as well as help us be able to work with a larger team during the shooting and also plan the shooting days. And of course, during the shooting, we made it in such a way that we could make space for what was our common vision and also what each of us had like individual intuitions about how to shoot one scene or the other. So in a way, we were able to make space for the commonness and the singularity of each of us. It was later on in the process of the editing that what was to become a film became a project which gave birth to distinct films. And in the case of my film, beside the obvious participation of Sheila and Ari, but it's also the result of important collaboration with Liria Begea, who is a filmmaker in Paris with whom I had worked before. In my film, it was a process of editing, which was basically a process of rewriting through the editing. It's interesting how, in a way, when one also sees the two films and the distinctness of each film that are based on the same project, are based on the same raw material, and yet are able to create such two different identities, which I think is great for each of them. But at the same time, it shows the necessity. That's how it should have been, because the difference explains that we could not have come to the very end with one film, because I think one needs to go to the very end of its own sensibility and creativity, and there is no place to make a compromise, because the compromise is so bad for creativity. As long as the collaboration with Sheila went on, it was very important, and I think none of us could have done what we did without the other, to the point that it lasted. And I think we could not follow longer for the reason that I said, that the films are the answer of why we couldn't have done one film.
Different perception of time.
I think there were two very important things during the process of the editing of the film. It was to stick to the idea that the film is one movement. It's one movement across the city and it's one movement across the symphony. It's a continuous feeling of progress, which is very often hindered by the dramatic impact of what happened in this city, of the continuous danger of the snipers, of how the architecture played a role in that distribution of fear and danger, but we are constantly progressing nevertheless. So in the film, there is moving through the city and moving through the music in Maribel's head. So this bringing both tempos, both temporalities, the time in music and the time in film in one unique movement, I think that was very important. And that was very important during this process of editing with Liria. And I think what I find is very interesting is that there is a different perception of time in music and there is a different perception of time in film, as film passes by or as music passes by. So this combination that there are certain moments that we do not know as an audience, are we in the time of the music or are we in the time of the film? So it creates some kind of bandit time. And I think this is what was very important to and crucial to succeed.
A clear but not obvious story.
Another key person is the person who mixed editing and mixed the sound, Olivier Guanard, with whom I've worked and I've done almost all of my other films, the way how he blended together these layers of music by remaining in this subtlety that creates a relief, creates clarity without creating an overdose of meaning. And that was very important in the film, how to not create too much meaning, but only a perception of meaning. And then obviously one of the key person here is Maribel, who I really have to say what was amazing was that in a film which is a quasi-silent film, it's very difficult to not overact. And it's quite amazing, and this is like to her credit and her skills as an actress, that she was able to act in the film by conveying all these emotions, at the same time keeping them at the level of the barely visible. And this is very tough thing to do and difficult thing, and I think also Maribel told me once that that was maybe her most difficult film to play in because of the fact of the reduction of the means that she had to act, to represent, to convey something. And I think where she has been great, because it's been a combination of acting and intelligence, is to be able to convey all this by not over-dramatizing the visibility of the meanings and of the drama on her face.
A particular way of working.
And something which was also very special in this film and a very beautiful thing to watch is to see Ari constantly conducting Maribel and her humming, just being off the frame. So as she's advancing, often he was walking backwards and conducting her from a bit far away, so that she was in the right tempo. And the right tempo sometimes meant the right wrong tempo, in order to create this décalage, this split between how the symphony sounds in an ideal condition, but how it sounds when its classic tempo is interrupted by this contemporarity of a crisis in the city. Maribel had an earpiece, and it was sent to her the music, not that she had to hum, but the other instrument with which she was in a dialogue. So basically it was like the partner was sent to her earpiece. In general, most of the time she hums the bassoon because it's a humming. So we wanted to find an instrument which is the closest in nature to the humming. Therefore it had to be a wind instrument, and therefore the bassoon was the warmest and the closest to the... Therefore, in the film, in also the way how it's editing, the bassoonist was a very key role.
How the past affects the present.
I think from the very beginning, we imagined to be happening somewhere between the past and the present. Or rather, that it's happening in the present, and you can tell that in the city, nothing is really like it looked during the siege, besides certain moments. But at some point, as she comes crossing after crossing, at some point she catches the past as one catches the flu. And then she moves on with the past and brings it to others. So it's like the past infects the present. So there's this combination between past and present, between music and architecture, which is like, it creates this, it's like liquid which progresses in concrete, if I can say it like this. This is the way how I imagine it. This dimension of reliving the past was important in two levels. Reliving the past by being in the present, but also the fact that reliving what was a traumatic moment in the life of others by somebody who is alien, who is an outsider to this, which is reliving a precise moment in their life, which is the case of Maribel Verdú in this case. And from the very beginning with Sheila, we had a common idea about it, that it should be an actress who does not come locally, because we wanted somebody who tries to relieve and tries to perceive and feel and therefore be able to relieve the experience of the others. My name is Anari Sada, born in Albania, in Tirana, and actually living in Berlin.
Makba.cat